What a crowded room we have. This is no doubt to celebrate the championship victory of the Towson Tigers baseball team, right? My God, we knew they could do it. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, any opening thoughts?
Not I. It's a beautiful morning. Glad to be here.
Mr. Comptroller?
Thank you, Governor. I just wanted to say I believe everybody had a great Memorial Day weekend, and we barbecued in the backyard. We watched a ball game with friends. We went to the movies with the kids. And I hope we all take a moment, if we could, just to reflect upon the heroic service of men and women who have made the ultimate sacrifice in defense of our freedoms throughout the generations. And that we took a minute to thank those men and women who continue, frankly, putting their own safety in harm's way on our behalf. But, Governor, you mentioned a situation that occurred over the weekend. And speaking of Memorial Day movies, we have the makings of a Hollywood script right here in Maryland, which occurred over the weekend. As the governor mentioned, it was the Towson Tigers baseball team who captivated the entire community, state, and frankly the whole sports world, if you were watching some of the national shows, by capturing the Colonial Athletic Conference Championship baseball victory as a complete underdog, came from nowhere, won the conference championship, and now have earned an automatic NCAA tournament bid. So for those who are familiar with what's transpired up there over the past few months, you have to appreciate the incredible display of guts and tenacity and perseverance that this victory by this baseball team represents. Because frankly, it's been on death row, let's be honest. The whole team was put through an emotional roller coaster due to no fault of their own. Yet they rallied together and won the conference title. I mean, I mean it when I say someday they're going to make a movie about that team and this season. Anyway, it wasn't written by a Hollywood scriptwriter. It was written by a group of young men, their coaches, and the families around them who refused to let the ongoing saga off the field affect the way they played on it. Young men who used the adversity as motivation rather than an excuse. I salute Coach Gottlieb and his players. They demonstrated the character we hope to instill in all of our young children, young people. These student athletes embody the very best of amateur athletics. Personally, I've had the pleasure to see them play, to meet these outstanding young men like academic All-American third baseman Zach Fisher, the MVP of the entire tournament, who, by the way, graduated with Towson with a 3.95 GPA, junior left fielder Dominic Fratantonio. It's a season I'm sure these players, their coaches, and the Towson community will never forget. And let me tell you, I won't forget the season either. So congratulations to these outstanding young men, to Coach Gottlieb on a season for the ages. You've made yourselves and the university and the state of Maryland proud. And as the governor said, one tiger, one fight, one heart. It's a great story.
It is great. I didn't really say that, but I liked it. What is it?
One tiger, one fight, one heart.
One tiger, one fight, one heart. I like that. There, now it's said. The great number of people, I think, who are here on the issue, as is the county executive of Prince George's County, are here on the issue of the long-anticipated, often-announced move of the Department of Housing and Community Development to a transit-oriented development site, correct? Is that what everybody's here for? Where does that fall? Is that in the
Secretary Collins agenda, item 11LT, Secretary Collins has that.
Okay. All right.
It's really in, but it can be moved up.
All righty. Humanese, and we also have that great oyster presentation we were going to start the morning with. Huh? Why don't we do the DGS item and get people underway, do you think? Or
That's fine with me.
Fine.
Okay. Department of General Services, let's do yours first, Secretary Collins.
Good morning,
Governor. Why don't we start with the balance of your agenda? What item is this that people are here on?
11 LT.
Okay, does anyone, we're going to hold that one aside. That is 11?
Yes, sir. 11 LT.
11 LT. Is there anyone here, is there any comments or questions that the board has on the balance of the DGS agenda items? By the way, I like that tie.
Thank you, sir. I've got that one.
Is it Joseph Banks?
Yes, sir. We shop at the same place. Governor, I have 32 items on the item on my agenda. We have withdrawn item 7. So we're removing the one that you talked about, it would be 31 items.
Okay, any questions on the other DGS agenda items? No? Okay. Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. Now we go and focus in on item 11LT. Sure. Thanks, Al.
Again, good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. 11LT. As the governor indicated, the long-awaited items associated with the movement of the Department of Housing and Community Development into Prince George's County. What the board has before it is a intensely negotiated lease with the proposed developer that will move this particular organization there into the county. And I'll bring up Mr. Michael Gaines, and we have a number of team members that can walk through all of the details on this item. We have spent considerable time talking with a number of individuals about it, but we'll hear. So I'll have Mr. Gaines to briefly introduce it and to answer any other questions that might be relevant to the topic. Mr. Gaines.
Thank you, Secretary Collins. Michael Gaines, Assistant Secretary, Department of General Services, Office of Real Estate. We are happy to introduce this item today. As you know, it has been a long time coming. We have a few slides that I'd like to go through, if you don't mind, and we have a couple of members of our team here that would like to make comments as well, and then we'd be open for any questions. The background of this lease procurement is couched in the idea that economic development in the state of Maryland under the O'Malley Brown administration is focused on recognizing the needs of various communities. Some communities desiring vibrant, dense development, smart growth. Other communities looking for low density and more conservative development. And so this project of relocating DHCD to Prince George's County is in the spirit of economic development that will benefit both Prince George's County and Anne Arundel County as well. The process overview, there was great competition for this procurement. We had 16 offerors that bid it for the lease. The primary criteria for selection included the economic proposal for the state lease, the developer's ability to deliver. It included criteria regarding mixed-use development. We were looking for not just a lease, but we were looking for a development that would provide for retail, residential components that would be vibrant, dense, and build on the idea that transit in the state of Maryland is very important. Out of those 16, we narrowed down.
Can I just ask one
question? Sure.
When you were doing that, were there other transit-oriented development models in the state that you were looking at? I mean, I can think of in my district, but I beyond, Rockville and White Flint. Is that the sort? I mean.
Well, we were looking actually for a developer. We crafted a fairly broad structure in the RFP, allowing the developers and the ultimate builder to tell us what they thought would work based on their investment. And we got a variety of proposals from, again, 16 entities. A number of them were for existing facilities as well as new construction.
I was thinking more of the vision of the transit-oriented development. Maybe the economic development piece.
Well, again, the vision that we laid out is taking advantage of the infrastructure that exists in Prince George's County and looking for a developer to lay out their vision for how a mixed-use project would work on a specific property. And so out of those 16, not all of them were the same, and they were different. We narrowed down to a short list of six, which included one existing building in that baffle round, and we were able to improve the offering by going through that best and final round of negotiations. After going through that process, we identified the high score proposer, which is Berman Enterprises. We do have representatives of that firm and family here this morning, and we're going to ask them to make a few comments. The ownership structure that they have presented us with includes a minority partner, African-American member of their team, which we are very excited about. We also understand that they will, their builder, lead builder on the project is an African-American-owned company in Prince George's County. The lease that they proposed and which is being presented here today is a 15-year lease, flat base rent of $39.71 per square foot on a net usable basis, which is different than how the market, the commercial real estate market, looks at these kinds of transactions. Typically, they will look at these transactions on a rentable or a total square footage basis. And so if we were looking at this on a rentable basis, the rent would be about $34 per square foot. There will be 350 spaces provided for the agency for the first 5 years of the lease. Those spaces will be free to all current employees, all employees of DHCD for the first 5 years. In that this is a transit-oriented development, the parking allotted to the agency will decrease after the fifth year to 200 spaces. During that time, the agency will work on developing a new policy for parking, which respects the TOD nature of the project. Total estimated first year costs are about nearly $4.5 million. We believe that this project leverages state investment to provide for this mixed-use project. A number of goals have been achieved in this project. Again, Prince George's has one of the greatest infrastructures for TOD and yet does not really have a lot of development going on around its TODs, around its transit sites. And so we believe that this is a transformational project and will set an example to other developers and agencies about how TODs can be done. There is a net public benefit to the state, county, and the city in this project, projected at about $8 million. There will be annual new taxes to the state of about $2 million and $1.7 million to Prince George's County. Project will create 325 construction period jobs and permanent jobs, 132. The time frame for the project includes a groundbreaking that will occur in the first quarter of 2014 with an expected occupancy in June of 2015. The developer is working very closely with the county, Prince George's County. County Executive Baker and his team have been absolutely phenomenal in helping to move this project along. The next set of slides here give you a sense of what the developer is proposing on the site. They will include 500 units of residential housing, and in the initial phases, about 65,000 square feet of retail. And the next slide simply demonstrates that. A key component of this project, if you could flip to the last slide, Kevin. Key component of this economic development initiative is that we recognize there are two communities that stand to benefit from what we are doing here. Prince George's County will be getting an agency that will leverage development for now and for the future, and I believe our selected developer will speak to the value of having the state anchor a project like this. And yet at the same time, we have a community in Anne Arundel County in Crownsville that sort of likes to have things not as dense, not as vibrant. And so we have an opportunity to repurpose and reposition the 100 Community Place building, which is currently the offices for DHCD, along with the 400-acre site at Crownsville Hospital Center. We believe in a collaborative effort with the county that we'll be able to establish a master plan for those two properties that will generate economic benefit and impact positive for the county as well. So we feel positive about what's happening here, that it is a direct benefit for the state and for both Anne Arundel and Prince George's County. I'll stop here and, if I may, introduce Brian Berman, who is a member of the Berman family, third-generation developers. For him, give you a few thoughts about how they feel about the project and their company.
Good morning, Your Honors, Governor O'Malley, Treasurer Kopp, and Comptroller Francho. I thank you for affording me the opportunity to present before you today. My name is Brian Berman. I am one of six members of the third generation of Berman Enterprises. 100 years ago, my grandfather, Melvin James Berman of blessed memory, hitchhiked from Dithuniac Springs, Florida, to this great state without a dime to his name. First selling cheesecakes through the Baltimore-Washington corridor, and then developing a dairy farm in Skaggsville, Maryland, where I was born, he was a self-made man. My grandfather brought his brother, Wolford, also of blessed memory, into the business, and after serving in World War II, they turned their interest to real estate approximately 60 years ago. They developed shopping centers in Laurel, Maryland, and the surrounding area. My grandfather was one of the founding members of the Rouse Company and helped make Columbia the successful place that it is today. They were men of their word, men of action, men with enduring relationships with tenants that would stay with our family for generations. Approximately 30 years ago, my father, Dennis, and his first cousin, Gary, added the crown jewel of the family's real estate holdings to our portfolio, the land surrounding the New Carrollton Metro Station, Metroview, as they called it. You see, they had a vision well before their time of the great benefits of transit-oriented development, and no site in their minds was as great as this one, with Metro, Amtrak, MARC, a bus hub, and surrounded by 28 lanes of highway, including routes 495, 95, 410, 450, and 50. Our family are long-term holders. We think and operate on a multi-generational timeline, and we believe strongly in the potential for this area. We live in Maryland. I was educated in Maryland. Go Terps. We work in Maryland, and we have grown as a family and as a company in Maryland. The Metroview site has sat largely undeveloped for all of these years because our fathers would not settle for single-story suburban development on this property when they knew in their hearts that smart growth meant density at major transit sites. They worked very hard and invested a substantial portion of their equity by selling half of the property to the federal government for what would become the IRS facility and plowing every dime back into infrastructure for the future. That deal and the CSC office building that followed laid the groundwork for all the infrastructure that they invested, as well as the acquisition of the final 10 acres that would make the site complete, connecting Route 450 to the Metro. After three decades of waiting for the proper catalyst for the mixed use to move forward, the time for this site is now. The time for smart transit-oriented development at Maryland Metro sites is now. The time for this area of Lanham to see high-quality development, smart growth that will raise the bar for development and redevelopment of this entire area is now. The purpose of all that I have said is to convey that partnering with the great state of Maryland and our dear friends in Prince George's County and the city of New Carrollton, the relocation of the Department of Housing and Community Development is the catalyst for this great vision to take its next and most important step forward. But for the DHCD relocation, none of this would be happening. We thank you. Any questions?
Thank you. Okay. How about, we want to hear from the county executive?
Do we know who's going to be doing the building?
So the building will be developed by Berman Enterprises and Andre Gingles, our partner. Guilford Construction is the construction company we've used. And we'll be starting that as soon as possible.
Great. Mr. County Executive.
Thank you. I have a number of the members of the delegation that are here. Won't we?
Please, if you want to bring everybody up, could all the Prince Georgians come up around your county executive? All the Prince Georgians and elected officials and Mr. County Executive, I will defer to you for the introductions.
It's a test. Since I was very, very attentive on appropriation,
that delegate whose name is broke.
I'm going to give everybody a chance to say their name. Okay, come on. And then I'm going to say Derek Collette.
Delegate Aisha Brayford, District 25.
Delegate Geraldine Valentina Smith, District 23A.
Delegate Marvin Holmes, District 23B.
Delegate Darren Swain, District 24.
And Derek, why don't you come up? If the panel of mine, if I could have Derek just say a few words, since he is the standing chair of Economic Matters, and then Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, did I say that?
Yes.
He said a lot worse, so I'll take that. Good morning, everybody. Oh, it's going to be one of these kind of mornings.
Good morning.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
We should have begun with the oysters.
Right. It's a little unsettling for me to be on this side of the microphone. It's a wonderful opportunity. It's a wonderful opportunity to be here with you all today. Certainly, I'm excited about the possibilities, about the proposed relocation. And I know the county executive is going to detail that, our excitement, our enthusiasm. But what I wanted to say to you all today, and certainly to my colleagues and fellow Marylanders from Anne Arundel County, and I wanted to emphasize that this, I want everybody to understand this isn't about taking from someone else or doing something at someone else's expense. And certainly, I know if I was in their position, I would be here to opposing the move. But what I wanted to say and what I think we need to sort of get our arms around is that we really are one Maryland. And oftentimes I think that's a trite statement that's trotted out for political expediency. But in this particular case, I sort of look at this as an opportunity. Prince George's County has a lot of undeveloped potential around this metro station. There's going to be a lot of talk about cost. But we also have to look at benefit, at revenue that's going to come in both to the state and the county as well. And we need to keep that in mind, the vast potential that we have at any number of metro stops that we have that we're working on. So certainly I want us to keep that in mind. I also want us to keep in mind that there are different things that we can do. I know some of the employees are not too thrilled about the move, but as a former state worker myself, who drove an hour or nearly an hour every day to Baltimore, and for those who drive to other locations around the state, workers from Prince George's County, they make those same sacrifices that we're asking others to make as well. So again, we have to keep in mind that we're one community, that we're trying to do what's best for the state of Maryland first and foremost to generate economic activity, to bring more revenue into our coffers, to pay for some of those wonderful ideas that all of us have from time to time. But again, I did want to say to my colleagues now and here that I don't want them to think or anyone in this room to think that it's about taking from someone else, because that's not what we're about. What this is about is an opportunity to expand for all of us, to grow the revenue base, the tax base for all of us, so that all the citizens of the state will benefit. And with that, I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Take your coke can.
Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, I want to thank you for having us here today. I also want to thank Secretary Collins and Michael for their hard work on this project. Certainly, I want to thank Secretary Skinner. I know it's been alleged that he wanted to come there because it would be a shorter commute. That is not true. You know, I think Mr. Berman actually summed it up. And you look at the sites in Prince George's County, and I think, Treasurer Kopp, you are absolutely right. You look at what we want to do in Prince George's County, you look at some of the development in Montgomery County, whether it's Bethesda or Rockville, and you look at the District of Columbia and where they've been able to anchor around their metro centers. This right here is the most attractive site in the Washington metropolitan area because you not only have the metro, you have Amtrak that's right there. So just think about the millions of people that you get going into the District of Columbia who now just pass through Prince George's County in the state of Maryland, who wants this anchor development when we get DHCD there will help us turn this into a place where people will actually stop, stay, shop, work, and spend money and bring resources to the state of Maryland. It also will be the first transit-oriented development that's taken place in a major way in Prince George's County, in a consistent development way. We develop around our metros, but it's usually one hit. So we'll put an IRS building, and then we'll leave the rest of it vacant and call that development. It isn't. The idea is how do you concentrate, and that's what I've tried to do in this administration, is take the limited resources we have, team them with what the state has, and attract not only federal, but dollars outside. This is a key development for us in the county. Certainly, on a political note, you know, there was great excitement about having DACD move to Prince George's County. Many believed that it would not happen, that we would not get a state agency to move there. So when we had the initial groundbreaking, everybody was excited. We'll be really excited at this next groundbreaking that it will really come here. But I think it's important, as Delegate Davis said, not just for Prince George's County. This really is about the state of Maryland. If we're going to grow in the ways that I think we want to grow in this state, both in terms of population and in terms of economic development, this is just the first of many developments that we can do in the county. If we want to attract people to the county that are going to live there, like young Mr. Berman, every time I meet with him, I always feel very old. But that type of excitement and development are exactly the people that we want to see come to Prince George's County and live in Prince George's County and grow. And this will help do it. I don't know if you'll get a chance to hear from Mayor Andy Hanko, but he has been working on developing around the New Carrollton Metro and New Carrollton City for a number of years. I know at least since the time that I've been a delegate, and that was in 1994. He has been working very hard. This will not only do development around the metro, but it will anchor an overall development reaching into the New Carrollton City. And so this is very important to us in Prince George's County. That's why you see the number of us here today. We ask that you help us move this forward. This is a great development. We're excited. And I'll end on this note. We're so excited about this development that on July 1, we have restructured Prince George's County permitting. We now have DPI, which is our permit, inspection, and enforcement. Did I get that right? Okay. A new department that will help us streamline development in the county and permitting in the county. We also developed the Department of Environment. So we've turned a whole Department of Environment where we look at transit-oriented development, look at how we can get the permitting process through faster, and this will be one of those first test projects for us to work on. So we're excited about that. I thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. County Executive.
Governor, could I just add, Mr. County Executive, I want you to know that we also received today a letter, or yesterday, I think, a letter signed by the chairs of the House and Senate delegate, Prince George's County delegation, in strong support.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Yes, we're excited about
it. On behalf of the delegation.
On behalf of the delegation.
Mayor Hanko?
Yes.
Good to see you, Mr. Mayor.
Governor, board members, county exec, I am Andy Hanko, the mayor of the city of New Carrollton, and I want the board to know how happy we are in New Carrollton, that there is a possibility of the Department of Housing and Community Development coming to New Carrollton. We encourage your vote in the positive. And having served as the mayor of the city of New Carrollton for 29 years, I've waited 29 years for development of something. Don't make me wait any longer, please. So, I can assure the employees that will be transferred to New Carrollton that I will personally see that they are welcomed and well taken care of, as I have for the past 29 years of New Carrollton, Maryland. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Is there some issue about parking for new employees? You want to address that, Michael?
Yeah.
Mr. Gaines?
Michael's fine. Yes, there was an issue as to whether or not the employees were going to have to pay for parking, but the HCD, the agency, the state of Maryland, will be paying for parking for the employees through the first 5 years of the lease. So they won't have to pay for their parking.
And what happens to the current campus, the wooded campus off in the woods, away from people?
We believe that there's an opportunity to repurpose, if you will, both the Crownsville Hospital site along with 100 Community Place, and working collaboratively with the county exec and her staff, we think that we can arrive at a plan that meets the needs of this community for low-density development. We think that there's interest in the hospital site to do that. There are a number of nonprofits currently on the site that will continue to be there. There are others, particularly from the veterans, various nonprofit veterans associations that desire to develop buildings on the site. And so we think that there is an opportunity here to redevelop Crownsville and 100 Community Place that will bring about a public benefit in the millions of dollars. And we have 2 years between now and the time DHCD moves to work on this plan. So we're anxious to get started and to sit down with the county and to begin those discussions.
Okay, great. Thank you. How about in opposition? How about the, let's start with Anne Arundel elected officials first, and then I know we have a group of employees here, so we'll take you as the third and final panel employees. Delegate, good to see you.
It's good to see you, sir.
All of you.
And as you know, I try to be constructive. This is the map, and I'll just hand this out to you, of where employees now live and work at the Department of Housing and Community Development. As you see on that map, it shows that most of these live in the Annapolis, Broadneck, and Pasadena peninsulas, as well as the Crofton areas. Out of nearly 400 employees, only 22 live in Prince George's County right now. DGS owns the current location. Parking's free. And I do understand, I think, the Assistant Secretary and Secretary for speaking with me beforehand about what changes they've done with the parking, which I understand is just for 5 years and will end. I think moving to this new location will add to the congestion on Route 50. I think it does the reverse of what we hope that the public transportation will do. It will cost these employees additional money, not the first 5 years in parking, just in gas alone, another $120 on average dollars per month. Instead of paying $1.5 million a year to operate DHCD at the state-owned building in Crownsville that they're currently at, taxpayers will pay, and according to what we've seen, $3.8 million per year to lease the space. And if we go by the figures from the last move, when the thought was to move it to the Carl Williams developer location, they said it would take $3 million to move it. So if you add that together, the first year alone is $3.8 million. You think about it, I mean, we know, and Governor, I know you're well aware, that the employees have not had a raise in 4 years. There's the cost of hospitalization, gas, heat, taxes have all risen. It seems we can't take care of these state employees, yet we can suddenly waste an additional $6.8 million in the first year alone to move and lease the space and force the employees to pay more for the things I've just mentioned. Public transportation for them is not a viable option. It's not existent in their current communities. I understand the need for economic development in Prince George's. It's something I'd be very excited about, but I think there are other ways to go about this and to encourage that development, and there are ways to do that. I think we need to look at who else is affected outside of the DHCD employees. For instance, opportunity builders. You know, they provide jobs for people in need. They have the cleaning contract at the current building. I had a woman call me on Monday last week. She cares for her sister who works at OBI, Opportunity Builders. If the agency moves, OBI has already said they would not be able to move with DHCD due to the distance they would need to travel. I have another letter from a constituent, and I have many. A woman writes that her husband was forced to retire at age 62 from DNR in order to protect his family benefits, takes Social Security. He was forced to take it at age 62. They had two in college. He can only find occasional work, and she says she only makes $47,000 a year. She's already had to cut groceries, heat, and prescriptions. She cannot afford how much more this is going to cost and the distance involved. I also have not seen that the state has started an impacting employee initiative as they did with the move of MDE when it separated from DNR and moved to Baltimore. In that initiative, they found jobs close to home for employees. They took their time and for this switch. And finally, I don't think it's right during a campaign to talk about moving a department because there's a lot more ramifications. It's not a way of creating new jobs. It's moving these jobs around. It's almost treating the employees as if they're part of an imaginary SimCity computer game. Years ago, Noah Hillman, the father of the former mayor of Annapolis, fought the move of the Treasury Department, Madam Treasurer, and the Controller, Mr. Controller, and they were able to stay here in Maryland because of that fight. I mean, stay here in Annapolis because of that fight. I don't think having the department scattered around the state benefits anyone. And Prince George's County, I'm very sensitive to my colleagues, and they're good people, and we get along very well, and there's always a quorum. But there seems to be this need and this cry to have a state agency headquartered there. And I just want to remind people that they do have a tremendous commodity in the University of Maryland, who is the largest employer of state employees. For all these reasons, I ask you to please reject this move. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Dolly.
Governor, Comptroller, State Treasurer, Delegate Tony McConkie, the current building resides in my district, and I would just like to argue process with you. I have sat through many hearings with Secretary Collins and Assistant Secretary Gaines, and that have asked the same question. If this is such a wonderful deal, show us the numbers. And at each point, they have said, you know, we can't release the numbers. We can't release the feasibility study because we're in negotiations. We have bids out. And so, but we promise you that when it comes time to go to before the Board of Public Works, that 45 days in advance, we will release this information to you. Well, here we are. I haven't seen the feasibility study yet. I would urge you to postpone this decision until we have a proper chance to look at all the numbers. Excuse me. Secretary Gaines said in his presentation just now that there's a net gain of $8 million. Well, that has changed dramatically from the original gain, which I think was 20-some million dollars. Show us the numbers. Release the feasibility study. I think there was an agreement made with the legislature, and in fact, the House of Delegates passed in the fiscal 2013 budget language saying that this information would be released to the legislature 45 days in advance. That hasn't been done. I would urge you to postpone this decision until everybody has a chance to look at it. If it's a wonderful deal, the numbers will prove it themselves, but let everybody have a chance to look at the numbers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Controller. I'm Delegate Steve Hsu. I chair the Anne Arundel County delegation, but I'm here today in my individual capacity as a delegate from District 31 in Anne Arundel County. I oppose the project for two reasons. Number one, it's uneconomic, and number two, it adversely affects Maryland taxpayers generally, and specifically the employees at DHCD who reside in Anne Arundel County. Regarding the economics, as you know, the current facility has no lease, no mortgage. It's bought and paid for, so occupancy costs are very, very low. This new facility in New Carrollton will carry with it a very large lease that you heard about this morning, substantial expense. Now, that's been justified using an economic analysis that I think is deeply flawed. And the reason I say that is because the entire full economic benefit, all the retail, all the residential, all the commercial space, the entire economic benefit is being used in that calculation to offset the cost of this lease. In other words, even though the state is only occupying 10 or 15% of the square footage of this project, about 100,000 square feet, of a 1 million square foot project, the economic analysis takes the benefit of the whole kit and caboodle and pretends that it's available to offset the cost of this lease. It's an absurd analysis and should be completely redone on a more reasonable basis. The other problem with the project is that...
So you've seen an analysis?
No, I know only what I've seen in the slides That's today, but it's okay. About a million square feet, roughly speaking. We have 100,000 square foot amount of that million square feet being attributed to the state offices, to DHCD's offices. So to me, to take the entire economic benefit and to declare it economic on that basis is unsound. It just, it really doesn't make any sense.
Gotcha.
The other issue is that the cost of the move, the cost of the lease, and for the first 5 years, the cost of parking are all going to be borne by taxpayers broadly, and I believe unnecessarily. And with respect to Anne Arundel County employees, they're going to be subjected to a much more substantial commute than they have today, which is ironic because this is a TOD, and yet we're going to have a group of employees commuting great distances to go to work. And after the fifth year, they'll have to bear the cost of parking. The consequences of that, of course, over time will be that Anne Arundel County employees will be gradually forced out of their jobs and replaced by others. So for both of those reasons, I would ask that the board please reject this proposal. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Delegate. Okay, how about, shall we hear from the... I'm sorry, Mr. Controller.
If I could ask a couple of questions. Not sure who to ask them of, Mr. Secretary. Is there anyone from DHCD here?
Secretary.
Come on up. I want to ask a question here if I could. Mr. Secretary, could I just ask whether your current location has compromised your ability over the past 20 years or so to carry out the mission of your agency? And if so, how is it compromised?
No, I don't believe so.
And obviously you're off there a little bit off the beaten path, but it's not like we have to take camping gear up there to find you. But the thing that strikes me in this, and it's obviously a very complicated issue with a lot of different agendas going on here, but the bottom line is we own the building that you're in right now. Is that...
That's correct.
Correct, Mr. Gaines?
Yes, sir.
And it's a perfectly good, attractive 83,000 square foot building on 57 acres of prime real estate, and it's bought and paid for and owned by the state of Maryland. So the plans for that particular parcel are what? I know you mentioned it in passing, but there's nothing in this plan, I take it, that addresses the disposition of the property that we own that we're leaving. Is there?
Yeah, I mean, as Mr. Gaines said, the idea is that we would work with other state agencies, work with the county, Anne Arundel County, and come up with an overall plan for the potential disposition of not only 100 Community Place, which is our building, but the entire Crownsville Hospital site, which in total is, I think, is close to 500 acres.
But isn't the normal process to have a decision about relocating to a new location coupled with the plan for the disposition of the current property? Didn't the previous proposals came before us? Didn't they have something in there?
No.
It is not normal or typical that, certainly you could, but it is not always part of a plan to have a resolution for a facility that you're leaving before you move. However, in this case, we have a little over 2 years to work with Anne Arundel County. In fact, the prior administration of Anne Arundel County, we have had a number of discussions with the economic development director, planning directors of Anne Arundel County about this move and the prospect of having a plan developed for the reuse of 100 Community Place and Crownsville, which, if I could say here, you know, they have been or were very excited about that opportunity. We reached an understanding for what could happen on the Crownsville Hospital site. We understand what future development could be. We understand the process for doing a small area plan in conjunction with the community. And I think development works today better, in fact, if you work with a community on the front end and do bottom-up planning rather than we do the planning inside our offices and we take the plan to the community and tell them this is what's going to happen.
Okay.
And so the process is to work with collaboratively with the community and the county to develop an acceptable plan. And we've got 2 years to do that. I'm sorry?
You're going to be looking at it in terms of the total site?
The total site. The hospital site and the 100 Community Place. So together, you've got about 500 acres that really could be of a tremendous benefit to the county.
Well, if I could, Madam Treasurer, just continue my questions. I take it we don't have any idea of the appraised value of the building that we own and the land upon which it sits. Have you conducted independent appraisals of that property?
We've not done a recent appraisal. We have done market assessments, and you know, we estimate the value on a vacant basis to be somewhere between 25 and 40 bucks a square foot. So you're talking, you know, $2 to $3 million for the property.
But potentially, it's a very desirable piece of commercial real estate, assuming the zoning gets changed in Anne Arundel County.
And I think that's a plus, that, you know, to the extent that it's desirable and, you know, you've got plenty of parking and it's a, you know, functioning building, it needs some work, like most buildings do, but we do believe that in this 2 years, we'll be able to identify a new use and a new user.
Help me understand this, because I'm really torn on this, because obviously I have great respect for Prince George's and county executive and understand transit development from Montgomery County, how successful that can be. And I'm a big fan of it. I really appreciated hearing from Chairman Davis that this is, you know, one Maryland, et cetera. But let's be honest, there's a turned into a bit of a political football, and you know, the finances tend to get put to one side, and respect the delegates from Anne Arundel County or here, but it strikes me from a financial standpoint that if I were comparing this to my own situation in Tacoma Park, if I owned my house and I had paid off the mortgage, which I haven't, but let's assume that I had better ability to pay off the mortgage and I was living in my house mortgage free, paying simply the maintenance and upkeep, and their zoning for that house mandated that only I or my family could live in it, but I woke up one morning and said, I'm going to leave my house and I'm going to rent the house next door, let's pick a number, $5,000 a month for 15 years. And so I just pick up, move over. I can't rent or sell the house I'm in because of the zoning. And you're, I guess, telling me today that you're going to change the zoning down the road, but how does that make sense when the state is being asked to spend approximately $58 million for a 15-year lease, and we're leaving a building that we own, it's perfectly appropriate, and where your agency has managed to fulfill its mission comfortably. I mean, how does that make sense from a financial standpoint? I understand the transit development. I understand the desires of Prince George's to have a state agency. I have no problem with that. My problem is that we're moving from something that makes sense to something that is quite speculative. And using taxpayers' dollars, as you say, is the anchor. So help me understand that.
Sure. I think the way we look at it, which is one of the reasons I really do enjoy working for the O'Malley administration, is that there's forward thinking about the future and looking at a project like this from a macro level, considering an investment that will lay the groundwork for future development. And so I think if you look at it from that perspective, what you understand is that an investment today will generate growth and development for the future in both communities. When we talk about the finances, yes, this will cost DHCD and the state twice as much in rent, but it's not simply an expense, it is an investment in jobs. We're talking in the 2 years that the building will be built, 325 construction jobs. Once the facility is up and running, you've got 125 permanent. The new personal property taxes, the new real estate taxes, sales taxes, we're talking about expanding the tax base of the state of Maryland. That, to me, is an investment that I would make every day to get $8 million return over 15 years on a net present value basis. And so I think when you look at the finances from a macro level, considering that there's economic benefit to both communities, once the redevelopment of Crownsville is done, we're talking multiple millions of dollars going to Anne Arundel County and the state because you're starting from a basis of zero. None of that 400 acres is currently on the public tax rolls. So you put that on the tax rolls, you now have an economic benefit to Anne Arundel County. It makes sense to do that.
And if I could, just for the record, how many state employees are currently at the site in Crownsville, and where do those individuals come from? And specifically interested in whether they hail from Anne Arundel or from Prince George's?
Mr. Comptroller, today we have approximately 380 employees. About 40% live in Anne Arundel County. Another 27% live in Baltimore City, Baltimore County. About 10% live in Prince George's County.
And your assessment of the commutes that those employees will have to make now, how much longer will they be, or shorter will their commutes be?
Well, again, we're talking about a two-year time period for the actual move. In that time frame, some employees will leave, we'll hire new employees, so we can't say when we move exactly what that situation is going to be. But if we talk about the current employees, it's another 15 or 20 minutes down Route 50 to get to the New Carrollton site from Annapolis.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
Of the Department of Transportation, is there any move ability or need to look at MTA and other schedules to see whether that will help ease the problem of the present employees at the DHCD? I said MDOT because I get all confused with the different parts of your organization, whether it's MDOT, MTA, or whomever.
As far as the commuting situation with the commuter plan?
Yes.
Is that what you're referring to? We do have Simon Taylor, who's the director of that department, that can speak to that. He'll be able to speak to the commuter bus service.
Simon Taylor, the MTA. We used to run a commuter bus, the 921, between Annapolis and New Carrollton, but about 4 years ago we had to discontinue the service due to very low ridership. We haven't been approached recently about looking at that again. We certainly could work with the department to reconsider that, but as I said previously, we had to discontinue the route due to low ridership. Dillon's bus service did continue the route on its own privately for a few months, but couldn't make a go of it financially without government subsidies. So, but I think
because of the ridership, but presuming, in fact, building on what the comptroller had asked, that there are people who are now going to be going from Anne Arundel County to New Carrollton, is there the ability, if the ridership is there, obviously,
it's certainly something we could reconsider a possible route. It would, like all our commuter bus routes, they are subsidized routes. There would probably be some subsidy involved for the route, but we can certainly look into that as a possibility.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Treasurer. I think that's a great point. There obviously are not good options right now. So.
Well, there was not the ridership now.
Exactly.
But if it develops.
Terrific. Let me just ask if I could, because the reason I'm a little bit torn on this whole issue is because we're put in a position of choosing Prince George's over Anne Arundel or Anne Arundel over Prince George's. Everybody's very emotionally involved, and there are, pleas made to me on both sides saying, you've got to do this, you can't let this happen. And I listened very carefully to what Chairman Davis said, and I appreciate his sentiments, but fundamentally we've got two jurisdictions basically being pitted against each other. And I'd like to ask about the state of Maryland's facilities master plan, assuming we have one. It seems as if this decision is made on a very case-specific basis that we're looking at. I remember a year ago we had a different case where we were moving the Maryland higher ed offices from rented space just up the road up to Baltimore to a state-owned building. And that kind of actually made some sense from a financial standpoint. Here we're doing the opposite. And I guess I'm looking for some kind of guidance as to the context which you make these decisions in, and some assurance that these moves, as we look at them, have some kind of guiding principles to them. And we're not just moving agencies around like pieces on a chessboard based on statements that are made. I mean, what happens if the person who wins the next election has made a commitment to Charles County to move something from Montgomery down there? And, or somebody, there's some other election result. What protects the people of the state of Maryland? And do you have a facilities master plan? Does that exist?
That's actually a great question. When the O'Malley Brown administration came into office, one of the mandates that was given to Secretary Collins and to the Office of Real Estate was to do real estate differently and stop doing the onesies and the twosies. Mm-hmm. And so we went out and hired a broker. We did a competitive process to identify a commercial broker that would understand commercial real estate and the kinds of decisions that we make on a day-to-day basis. And two of those gentlemen are here today. Pete Larkin with T.B. Richard Ellis and Maurice Walker is his partner from Birch Advisors. And over the last three and a half years, they have helped us craft a strategy about making real estate decisions that are based in lowering occupancy costs, Sometimes that means moving from an owned facility into a leased facility. Sometimes that means going the other way. But it's based on the idea that we're going to have a more efficient operating portfolio that we look at, again, from a macro perspective to understand, first, the mission of the agency. And we do that. We have a book about this thick where we spent months talking to every agency, finding out why do they make real estate decisions. These guys have actually staff members that sit in our offices, and we look at these decisions, from a broader perspective, to your point. The decision about relocating DHCD to Prince George's County is based in economic analysis that demonstrate to invest these dollars over the next 15 years has a direct benefit not only to Prince George's County but to Anne Arundel County and the state as a whole. Critical mass is very important when you're looking at commercial real estate. One of the reasons New Carrollton has not taken off is that the federal government has done onesies and twosies. This project will bring critical mass, and to the treasurer's point about Rockville and other TODs, you've got critical mass. That's what will attract other people to come to your site. I used to work for the Rouse Company, just to take a little bit of detour, and I managed shopping centers. And I wondered, why do they have so many jewelers in a shopping center? Well, it's critical mass. People want to go where there are other people shopping. And that's what's going to happen in New Carrollton. People want to be there because there's activity going on. And we make these decisions based on good economic analysis, good professional assistance, good hardworking state employees that look at these issues every day.
Okay. So there is a master plan that serves as a ballast and a check and balance to just random decision making that I mentioned, such as someone saying Howard County's the center of Maryland, we're going to put a new state agency up there if, you know, I win the election. Is that, there's some protection against that?
We make decisions in my shop based on good information, good data, and what makes sense for the state of Maryland.
Okay, so I understand.
I can just add, since your comment is directed towards me, and I've been patiently listening to your insightful line of questioning these many minutes. I think you're papering over the smart growth imperative that we have as a state. I think you are not taking into account the mission we have to grow in more sustainable ways. I think you are making light of the advantages of transit-oriented development and the benefits of transit-oriented development for our entire state, not only for the immediately affected county that has the greatest opportunity for that, which happens to be Prince George's County. And if there's a whole room full of people here, there are employees that would like to have their say, and I'd encourage you to move it along, and if you'd like to run for governor, you're welcome to do that yourself.
If I could, the $1 million that's been put aside with the treasurer as a deposit on this, or a bond, I take it, from the developer. That makes a lot of sense. But even if this were to stumble, as the governor was saying, it's an extraordinarily important transit-oriented development. If this stumbles, we're going to be in a world of hurt as far as this particular site. So let me just ask whether you read the recent Washington Business article about the decision by the adjacent building to where apparently we're going to build this with the developer, this new facility for planning. Apparently there's an 11-story building adjacent to that that the main tenant has announced, at least the tenant that is on 10 floors, that we may be leaving by the end of the year. How does that impact the viability of this particular project?
I'd like to answer that and then ask the developer themselves. I'll answer it initially, then I'll ask Brian if he would address it as well. From our perspective, the relocation of CSC from the building next door to this development is unfortunate. However, I think what the benefit is in New Carrollton is that this project will go forward and demonstrate to the marketplace that there is viable development going on. And when you have amenities such as this mixed-use project, along with the transit infrastructure, it will be more attractive and actually help the folks at the CFC building release their facility, because there will be shopping, there will be an opportunity to live there, you'll be able to get on transit, and so marketing that building will be a greater opportunity. Brian, do you have a...
Just to echo what Mr. Gaines said, hi. The first thing is that the building we're going to be building, hopefully for DHCD, is going to be leading to the next level of development. The CSC building, regardless of whether CSC decides to stay or leave, will not immediately impact future development. The second thing I would say is we know that building intimately. We built it with Guilford. We leased it to CSC. We have them in three or four buildings of ours. And we own 30 acres right next to it, all the acres, including their parking.
I'm sorry, I missed that. You own that
building? We built the building.
Right.
We have all the land around it. We don't currently own it. We sold it to Urban America, and this is my point. And they're great folks, wonderful folks, but they're not local. And they don't have the relationships with CSC that we do. And they also have a much higher basis in the property. And so our plan, to be frank with you, is to actually engage CSC about staying on the property and staying in the site, share with them our plans for the additional development, and make our contacts, which I think are more intimate because we've had a 25-year relationship with that company, to get them to stay. Because even though we aren't the owner, we don't want to see them leave either. But so I think that hopefully answers part of your question.
If I could just thank you. You can stay up there if you want. But I just wanted to ask Mr. Gaines, appreciate all of the discussion about your company and my appreciation for your economic success, and I guess you're based in Rockville, my home county, so, you know, God bless America. Please make a lot of money. We need you. But if we thoroughly vetted this whole proposal from a standpoint of the Berman Company's ability to deliver what they state here today, because remember we had this project a year or so ago or a year and a half ago, and it ran into the rough because of the financial problems of some of the participants. I take it none of that exists.
None of that exists with this company and this family. As Brian has said, they are a third generation, very successful build-to-own real estate, commercial real estate company. There are no questions, absolutely none whatsoever, that they have the ability to deliver on time, on budget.
Please. One of the things that we like about the Berman company is that we're thoroughly committed from the administration standpoint of helping them. We had the same question you did, and I think we asked both Michael and Ray. I think they got a good question from me of, listen, I went out there and told these folks we're going to do this and this company is going to go forward, and it didn't. So we wanted to know whether this company had the wherewithal financially to make this work before I committed any dollars from the county. I did not commit dollars to the last project because I had some questions. I said I want to see things going forward. On this one we have. We believe that this is going to be a great project for us. It's going to spur economic development. And if I heard the line of questioning. If you think about in D.C. on U Street, and Ray remembers this, when Mayor Barry moved the office over to
the
Reeves Center, everybody thought he was crazy. And they were like, why would you move a government building into a rented place on U Street? 20 years later, he looks like a genius. None of my kids want to go to New Carrollton, but they go to U Street. That's what this will be. the economic engine for this state. That means we will have a chance here to not only help in Anne Arundel County, but to help in Prince George's County. But 20 years from now, people will be saying, who thought of this great idea of anchoring development right here in New Carrollton? That's really what this is about, is how do we make the best, not for Prince George's County, but for the state. How do we invest? That's what I ask myself every day and ask our people. Because there are plenty of folks who want us to invest county dollars. But we're not investing everywhere. We're making strategic decisions based on what this county will look like and what the state will look like in the next 10 years. We have a chance to get the market share that we now see in D.C. to come to Prince George's County, come to the state of Maryland.
Mr. County Executive, I think that's a terrific statement, and I am very strongly in favor of state investment, particularly around transit facilities. The question, and it's not your responsibility here really, is what exactly are we leaving behind? I hear the hopeful statements that there is going to be a rezoning of the Crownsville property, and I can see that as potentially economically beneficial. But the fact of the matter is we're moving from a building we own to a building we rent. It's not, I'm not sure what the Reeves Center dollar amounts were, but when we get up in the $58 million range, that's a significant allocation of rental income from the state when we don't have to pay that, number one, for this agency. And, you know, number two, my goodness, for half that, we could probably build a building and own it as a state in that area. And, you know, partner with Berman on other projects. But it's the question of the economics of this that really troubles me, but I'm happy to defer generally to the governor's desire to move the calendar along unless Mr. Berman wants to make a statement.
I wanted to point out that one of the things that we find most exciting about the property, the project, is the Crownsville site. We are, as a developer, very interested in the potential for that site as well. You know, for purposes of moving this along, and because the New Carrollton project is so large and has to move through a lot of processes, we've bifurcated it. But just so you understand,
yeah,
our fathers, my father Dennis and Adam's father Gary, some of their first projects were repurposing schools in Laurel, Maryland and Belleville, Maryland, from old unused schools that were dilapidated and no longer in use to commercial developments that are vibrant, bring jobs, and bring tremendous economic development to those areas. So just as a developer, I can say to you, we are very interested in that site. And just to add one more additional point about the economic study, I would say to you that the site has sat for 30 years. It has infrastructure unparalleled, you know, from what you've heard. It sat for 30 years without the real main catalyst to move it forward. And just in the recent 10 years, we purchased the 10 acres upon which DHCD will go. And that's going to be that catalyst to drive major transit-oriented development, which goes from the mid-rise into the high-rise. And so I think there is a very clear path of this being that and providing that for the state. So.
How about the cost-benefit analysis of the delegates we're talking about, Mr. Gaines?
We have, let me go back to one of his statements. It was the 2012 legislative session where there was budget language that required DHCD and DGS to provide a report on this project following approval by BPW. And we have communicated with DLS that we intend to do that. In addition to that, we met with both Senator Casemeyer and Delegate Conway, budget chairs, briefed them on the project, got their consent. That report was then submitted to DLS. DLS has the information, has subsequently I believe issued a letter indicating their approval or support for the project because the economic analysis made sense. They believe that the repurposing of Crownsville made sense, and so we're happy to make the delegate aware of the DLS information and provide All the information is needed.
And the cost-benefit analysis, is it in the book here?
It's not. We have not provided that. We're happy to do that following the meeting.
Okay. And
Could I ask a couple
questions?
Madam
Treasurer? Sure.
I think this presentation has been excellent. I look forward to hearing from the employees. I have one overall question about New Carrollton, that is the time frame. I see this as the basis for economic development, which includes immediately the office retail and residential. What's the time frame?
We are expecting that a groundbreaking will happen first quarter of 2014, and so the first building that will get started is the DHC building. Shortly after that, the retail and the residential, and so they'll be running concurrently.
All right. So the three parts of the project should all be in place by.
The occupancy for DHCD is 2015. The retail and the residential will follow shortly beyond that, but not beyond. What is this? Within the next 6 months after that? 4 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Delegate, you want to be heard again?
I'd just like to correct it. The economic analysis is supposed to be released before it came before the Board of Public Works, so that everybody could see it and could understand it and understand all the numbers that are being thrown out to sell the project. We like to see the numbers ahead of time. So I disagree with the Secretary. We're supposed to see the numbers in advance.
How about that, Mr. Secretary?
Well, I can only go by what was in the budget language.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be happy to provide the delegate with the budget language. We review that. Happy to do that.
Okay.
Another question of the secretary or the governor or DBM, I don't know who. My basic concerns were the employees, and you've taken care of one of them with parking. A second one with the ability of looking at mass transit if there is the ridership. The third one, it was mentioned when we have made moves before, there has been an effort made for those who cannot move for one reason or another, and I recognize this is a different situation because the jobs are moving and people can follow their jobs. But is there any way for those who cannot to help them search out alternatives?
We have not specifically talked about that, but I certainly do imagine that's something that we could talk about with DBM.
As I say, it's not the same thing as closing an institution or something.
Yeah,
but still, if you can reach out and help.
The other thing that I've talked with my employees about is enhancing our telework policy. In fact, I met yesterday with some union representatives, and we talked specifically about that idea of enhancing the telework policy to allow some employees, depending on what their positions are, to be able to work from home. We also have two satellite offices.
Environmental benefits.
Yes. We also have two satellite offices. We have an office on the Eastern Shore in Cambridge. We also have an office in Baltimore City. So we're looking at other options for employees to either telework or work from one of our satellite facilities.
Thank you.
Mr. Controller.
I'd also like to let the county executive know he made a very telling point when he spoke about U Street, because my son rented an apartment there for 2 years at 13th and U Street, and it is an absolute, you're right, it's an absolute gold mine. So speaking as the tax collector, please replicate that if you're able to. But I hope that we can continue this discussion of a master plan at some point, because obviously the process, despite all of our good intentions, is susceptible to just some random ad hoc decisions, and we need to make sure that the state of Maryland has got a proper approach. I would have no problem with this if the state agency was not moving from a facility that we already own and that we're not paying any rent for. But that's not the case here. So whether this is a transit development or whether it's we're locating a state agency in a jurisdiction that deserves to have some, in the future, what I hope is that there's much more of a fiscal approach to how these decisions are made, and that there's some context of a master plan that everything fits into. And thank you very much. And Mr. County Executive, you made some really tremendous presentation, and members of your delegation have really done an impressive job. But thank you, because I'm obviously torn on this, and I'm really appreciative of your substantive comments.
Thank you. Actually, it's of Michael,
okay.
Mr. Secretary. Thank you. Just because of the size and the importance of the move from Crownsville, the development of the Crownsville property, could you keep us informed? I assume everybody, the governor will be, periodically, I don't know, quarterly basis, of how negotiations are going and what is happening with the Crownsville site?
We'd be happy to. You know, frankly, we love partnering, and we look forward to partnering with Anne Arundel County to address that redevelopment.
Maybe a little sunshine and pushing would be helpful.
Yes. Be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Okay. It's 11:40. Let's hear from the employees who are understandably the ones being most directly impacted by this. Any employees from DHCD? No? I thought for sure there were employees here. Yes? No? Maybe? Sure. Come on up. We're still on the first agenda item.
I'm not an eloquent speaker, and I don't know Robert's rules of order, so...
That's all right. That never bothers us here either.
My maiden name is Robert, but my husband... my name is Jane Slocum. I work for DHCD. I'm an asset manager. And my husband grew up in PG County in New Carrollton. And when we first got married in 92, we lived in Greenbelt, Maryland. And when I got pregnant, we decided we needed a home. And we couldn't afford to live in Greenbelt, so we moved to Anne Arundel County. I love my job. I started with DHCD about 3 years ago, and I love what I do. And I think that $3.8 million could go to house low-income families. And although it's exciting to me to have a brand new building to work in, as opposed to the one we're in now that has issues, I personally feel like it's the best, better use of my tax dollars to help people who are poor. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Any employees from DHCD? Anybody want to be heard? Okay. The item is before us. I guess governor moves approval.
Second.
Seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
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 And with the understanding that we're going to look at transportation and job placement and updates on Crownsville.
Okay. And the ayes have it. And unanimously, we now go on to the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'd first like to advise everyone and remind them that next Board of Public Works meeting, June 12th, is at 1 p.m. We have a 1 p.m. start time 2 weeks from now in this same room. This morning, we have 24 items on the Secretary's agenda. We are withdrawing item 5.
What is that? Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Let's just give a little bit of time here. I thought for sure all those people against the portraits were here for DHCD. We're going to let people switch out a bit.
I think
Joe is here on what?
On item 4, which is a wetlands license. The wetlands administrator, Mr. Dolden Moore, is recommending that the Board of Public Works grant a wetlands license to the Department of Natural Resources.
Is that the one that everybody's here on?
That is the, I don't know if that's the one everybody's here on, but I do know that that's the one that there is apparently a presentation ready to go on. So, yeah.
Okay. So item number?
Four.
Mr. Moore, come on up.
You probably just want to hear the presentation and real quickly go to the Real short.
I will be brief, and I can say I don't have a group of people standing behind me that don't like this project, which has changed for me up here. And all, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Comptroller. For the record, I'm Golden Moore, Wetlands Administrator to the Board. Before you today is Wetlands Case 12-1231, Department of Natural Resources.
How many people are here on this one, by the way? Show of hands. Okay. A couple people. All right.
Okay, this project is to restore a natural and self-sustaining oyster population by creating hard bottom habitat on 184 acres of natural oyster bars in Harris Creek, Talbot County, with alternative materials and seeding with oyster sap. This will be approximately over 300,000 cubic yards of various materials, including oyster shell, clam shell, stone, marl, brick, and crushed cinder blocks and slag to be deposited for the hard bottom. This is the first project of its kind for the Department of Natural Resources. In an attempt to restore oyster habitat to an entire creek system, the project is part of President Obama's May 29th Chesapeake Bay Protection and Restoration Executive Order and also Maryland's Oyster Restoration and Aquaculture Development Plan announced by you, Mr. Governor, in December of 2009. Partners in this project are the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, NOAA, and the Chesapeake Bay Foundations. And the Corps started their phase of the project last year and will continue in cooperation with DNR this year. And I understand that Secretary Gill has a presentation for the Board.
Secretary Joseph Gill of the Natural Resources, good morning. Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer.
Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
This is your first.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. It's actually a pleasure to be here. The item is a wetlands license for 184 acres, but it's really the context and the enthusiasm around this project, how it got here, that's a story worth telling. This is the largest oyster restoration project in Maryland history, the largest in Chesapeake Bay history. Oysters, as we know, are a keystone species. They provide habitat. They filter the water from nutrients. They also taste very good. We are, as many of you know, at a place where the population is at less than 1% of historic levels. We've engaged in restoration efforts for many, many years. In Harris Creek alone, there have been 50 years worth of restoration efforts. Why have they failed? Several reasons. They've been small scale. They've been in areas where harvesting has been allowed to continue. They've been scattershot all across the bay. Something changed in 2009. What changed was the governor introduced a 10-point oyster restoration and aquaculture development plan. 10 points to move us forward and provided the investments behind it to make it happen. We have a short video which we'll show in a few minutes, but here's the essence of it. Number one, focus on targeted restoration strategies. That tied in with President Obama's goal of restoring 20 tributaries with oysters by the year 2025. Expanding the sanctuary program, increasing hatchery production, doing something in a big way to give the oysters a chance that they have not had before. Harris Creek is 600 acres. The intent is to restore the entire creek by providing 371 acres of good oyster habitat. With the Corps of Engineers, we are constructing reefs. With the Oyster Recovery Partnership, a nonprofit, we are seeding these reefs with seed produced by the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Science at Horn Point. Cost is $31 million. It's very conservative, highly conservative. According to the Corps, we expect to reduce that cost during the planting efforts. In part, the costs assume that there would be no natural spathset, no natural oysters reproducing in Harris Creek. That, in fact, is now occurring. The most important point here, though, is that the state's investment in this project has been $21 million, 21 of the estimated 31. Fiscal year 13, the capital budget of the governor provided $8.1 million. Fiscal year 14, $9.5 million. Two final points. I work at Natural Resources, so So the idea of investing in an oyster is a great idea. Talk to people around the rest of the state, they love oysters, but they do not necessarily know what it takes to restore them. We, this governor, through this plan, has made an investment to restore the oyster. It's a good choice. It's a good choice for the future of this species. It's a good choice for the future of the culture of the watermen here, the culture of the people here that embrace the oyster as part of our heritage. Last point is the enthusiasm that surrounds this project. People are beginning to believe for the first time that the oyster species in Maryland may in fact be restored. The video will be good to see now.
William Brooks in 1905 wrote these words: "The oyster grounds of Virginia, North Carolina, and those of Georgia and Louisiana are increasing in value, and many of our packing houses are being moved to the south. But there is no oyster farming in Maryland, and our oyster beds are still in a state of nature, affording a scanty and precarious livelihood to those who depend on them." Well, that was 100 years ago. Now, finally, we are a century later. While those words still ring true, the regulations we're putting forward is the turning point here.
In 2009, the governor initiated the Oyster Restoration and Aquaculture Development Program. This has resulted in a order of magnitude increase in oyster aquaculture. It's resulted in the protection of 24% of Maryland's oyster habitats, and in the long run has resulted in a threefold increase in oyster harvest over that same time period. The state of Maryland has enhanced and augmented what was there before. I mean, the capital funds that have been made available, the budget to really focus on how we can have a measurable impact, can't be described. Harris Creek is one of our best remaining oyster rivers. We are trying right now to restore Harris Creek to something of its former glory by restoring over 100 acres of oyster reefs directly to these creations. Harris Creek is the first tributary of 20 that's being restored, if you will, within the Chesapeake Bay as a result of the presidential executive order from 2009. Governor's Oyster Restoration and Development Plan was instrumental in allowing us to secure funding for Harris Creek. Because of the leadership role and the funding that the O'Malley administration has provided, and especially under the leadership of the governor, is really kind of jump-started the whole, in my opinion, the whole Bay restoration and focus on oyster recovery. What's happening in Harris Creek is turning into the blueprint, if you will, for not only the other tributaries within Maryland, but it's also being looked at within Virginia and up and down the East Coast for other positive ways of conducting oyster restoration. So the future is bright for oyster populations in the state of Maryland. We're at a point of relatively low natural disease pressure, and we're having unprecedented investment in oyster breeding. The future is very bright.
The oysters are important to our commercial fishing industry. They also help filter and clean our waterways. All of you know that. But despite their importance, our oyster population has been suffering from the human choices, from the runoff, from the loss of habitat, from the disease. But we're making progress, and today we're going to...
here, our shellfish director, Mike, want to stand up? Mike is the guy you saw in the video, the nice young man.
Hello, Mike.
And thanks to Barry Kazan and her staff for putting that video together. It's inspiring. So we ask you, unless there are questions, if any of us can answer, we would ask you.
I have a question.
Sure.
The bars that showed, I think it was 2008, went up to 24%.
Those are the
24% of what?
It's the restorable oyster bottom in the Chesapeake Bay. We said we used to have 9% of that restorable bottom set aside for restoration. We moved that to 24% as a sanctuary area where no wild harvesting was allowed.
24% of the restorable
bottom. Yes, good bottom. Some of the bottom of the bay is mud. Some of it's actually a substrate. Okay. So we set that aside to
And that what is restorable stays permanent? I mean, it's not shifting.
The bottom is always shifting.
Yeah.
It's a matter of constructing reefs that will stay in place over time. It's a work in progress. Mike, you want to add anything to that?
You need to come to the microphone. I just want to understand what it was I just saw.
No, that's a good question. So we're trying to restore between 30 and 50% of the restorable bottom in each tributary, and we have some new tools at our disposal that allow us to measure that directly through the use of wide array sonar. So we actually take a boat working together with NOAA, go back and forth, but we can really...
So you can look at a snapshot in time at any point. The goal is at any point to have 30 to 50%.
Yeah. You have to pick a starting point somewhere. So as we move from creek to creek, we pick a starting point to set up a blueprint for where we're going to work.
So that graph we saw was total bay bottom?
Yeah. It was percent of available habitat. There has been a synoptic survey that's a census of the entire bay, and that was used for the basis.
And what proportion is restorable?
It depends on the tributary. Some tributaries, there's
always... Well, but you had a number, 24, so it's got to be 24% or something.
24% of the total restorable bottom is
permanently
protected in sanctuaries where there's no oyster harvesting on.
And what proportion of the total bottom, the rest being unrestorable, is the restorable part?
The restorable part, it depends on the sanctuary. It could range from probably below 5% to approaching 50%. It depends on the area. The percent that's restorable. You go into each area, you do a complete mapping of it, and you see how much is restorable currently. That varies from tributary to tributary. Sort of like you're going to build a house, and you have a plot of land. You look at the parcels of land that pass the perk pass that have adequate grade and flow.
And that's the buildable part out of a total.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I'm asking.
I don't have any idea of the entire bay what percent is restorable, but I'm sure it's quite low. It's probably below 10% of the entire bay. It was probably always that way.
Okay, I'm just trying to get some idea of the dimension.
I have a question.
Mr. Comptroller.
How much did this inspiring infomercial cost to make?
our staff did it. We love doing this stuff. It's great.
Terrific.
Tells a story.
I think it was like too much governor in that one.
This is my first time here. Come on. I'll scale it back for the next time. The first time. I got it.
Okay. Anything else on this agenda item? Controller moves approval, seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you.
And how about the balance of the secretary's agenda? Anything else? Any other questions on the balance of the secretary's agenda? Good to go? Controller moves approval, seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Budget and Management. Oh, I'm sorry. Department of Natural Resources, real property.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Emily Wilson with the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We do have 7 items on our agenda today, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions. Thank you.
Any questions? Department of Natural Resources budget items. Hearing none, Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the controller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Budget Management.
Thank you.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 19 items on the Department of Budget and Management's agenda for today. I'll be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Any questions, Mr. Comptroller?
One question on item, Supplement B, DBM Action Agenda. Last page of my briefing book. Item 18, GM, I believe. Supplement B, Department of Budget Management Action Agenda. And the item I'm looking at is $8,000 for increased funding to provide coordinated closed-circuit TV equipment installation at Baltimore City Detention Center. What is that project?
So this is basically just a budget amendment. That was money that was in the department. We're moving it for a different purpose and just repurposing it as indicated. That $8,000 is to provide for closed-circuit TV equipment.
At the detention facility. Okay. Madam Secretary, I assume there's no one from corrections here, but if there is there anybody from... Well, if you could communicate just my personal perspective that I hope at the detention facility we will as quickly as possible polygraph as many employees as work in the security of that prison to find out who is... I don't know what the right words are, but who's involved with illegal practices and who isn't. And secondly, the folks that have been forced into retirement, apparently, because of allegations of illegal activity, I hope someone can at some point provide a summary for us of what exactly is happening to those employees. Who have been word is not terminated, but they've been asked to retire, which is an odd form of disciplinary action. And I'd like to know whether they have been rehired, whether they're receiving pensions, whether they're receiving health care. What is the situation with people that have been terminated through forced retirement? And but thank you for bringing this item before us, and maybe the task force that's been announced is the right group to send something to, but
we'll be glad to get you an update.
Thank you.
Made a lot of strides, still have a lot of work to do, and keeping the closed circuit cameras in good working order is part of that. A part of that, as was the training of a canine unit, the first in our state's history, that's actually trained to sniff out cell phones, as will be the T-Corps work to reroute cell signals. All of these things are the actions that we take in order to restore security and the integrity within our correction system. And I'm not sure I've had the opportunity to talk about it here at the Board of Public Works, but my colleagues should know that 2 years ago, it was the state of Maryland that initiated the MOU with our federal partners, and there was only one sentence in that mission statement, and that was to go after corruption in our correctional services. We did that. We initiated that. We went looking for this because we had every reason to believe it was there. And we're going to continue to go after it. Governor moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to University System of Maryland.
Good morning, Governor, Madam President, Mr. Comptroller. Jim Sterling from the University System. We have six items on today's agenda. Be happy to address any questions you have.
Any questions, University System of Maryland? Did you get to catch the Towson baseball finals?
Didn't see it, but heard about it.
Okay. Any questions?
Question.
Mr. Controller.
Item 5S.
It's the Towson Dining Services contract. I'm going to ask Lucy Slate to come over, procurement director from Towson.
Excellent.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Controller. I'm Lucy Slate, Director of Procurement for Towson University, and
thank
a proud
you.
Graduate class of 1978, Towson State University.
Excellent.
Go Tigers!
Yes. Go Tigers. Thank you for being here. Okay, so we're being asked to approve a five-year contract with the Compass Group to provide campus dining services at Towson University. It's a single bid contract. It's expected to generate nearly $90 million in gross revenues for the winning company. And this interests me for a couple of reasons. One, it looks as if you worked very hard to generate competition.
We did.
So it wasn't a sole bid, and I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
But the one bid that you did end up with was submitted by the incumbent vendor. Given the length and the of this contract and the dollar amount involved, and the fact that you're a major metropolitan university, I would assume that vendors would have been crawling all over your procurement to compete for this contract. And what, in your view, is the problem here?
Not a problem, Mr. Controller, but really we were victims of several circumstances, both pro and con. First of all, Compass Group North America, Chartwell's division in various corporate names, has been the incumbent on this contract at Towson for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's an award-winning installation. Clearly, it was an account they were very interested in keeping, so they worked very hard on their proposal. We did advertise on eMaryland Marketplace and on our bid on our bid board, but the reality is there are really only three major higher education-focused dining services organizations that operate east of the Mississippi. So we were one of, looking for one of those three primarily. Startup costs in terms of changing out a contract like this are huge. Staffing up, bringing in new equipment, training new employees, it takes quite a while for them to recover startup costs. The upshot of that discussion is that the industry always knows itself and its competitors better than we ever will. There were at least six other good-sized universities in the region out for new dining contracts at the same time as Towson. American, George Mason, Shippensburg, and Clarion, as well as St. Mary's Montgomery College in Maryland. Since it's so expensive, probably upwards of $100,000 or more just to respond to an RFP of this magnitude, they're going to focus those resources on accounts they believe they can win. They looked at Chartwell's longevity, at their at the quality of the program, which is award-winning, at the universities and the students and the parents' satisfaction with the program, and said it would be a huge obstacle to try and displace them, and we really believe that's the reason why.
Thank you, and that's an excellent response. And I guess my question is, if it is a matter of several universities simultaneously opening their services to procurement.
And actually three were awarded, or notice of award was issued from Towson, Shippensburg, and Clarion the same day.
Is there any point in the university system, I understand some of them are not in Maryland, but for those in Maryland, is there any point to the system trying to be air traffic controller for these procurements and say, look, we're not going to have two or three out in the street at the same time, we're going to stagger them so that there is a chance for competitive bids?
Only one was part of USM, and that was us. UNBC's last week was a renewal of something that was competed 5 years ago. Montgomery College, CCBC, different, we were really in different places. St. Mary's is independent. I actually didn't know St. Mary's was out until we were on the street. It probably would have been good if we had timed it differently, but what drives the timing on this is expiration of the existing contract.
Okay, let me just ask about all the sweeteners, as I call them, in the contract.
We like to call them other values.
Other values, okay. Well, this is loaded with other values. Apparently there's a commitment on the part of the vendor to spend more than $5 million in capital investments, a $500,000 gift to the new United Stadium, a $50,000 unrestricted gift
each year, a $50,000 annual campaign contribution, $75,000 for marketing promotion, the list goes on and on and on. Can you just help me understand how these added values, whatever you call them, how they are added? Are they do other institutions that solicit dining service bids do this kind of, addition of, I call them Christmas ornaments, I guess, but how exactly does the process work as far as the timing of when you negotiate these add-ons?
Okay. And why? Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, to answer your question, yes, these do happen at other universities. And remember, too, this is a revenue-generating resale contract. It is for totally or virtually all of it is auxiliary services revenue from student board fees, athletic concessions, catering, retail sales. It's this is resale revenue generating. And, of course, our auxiliary services operations at the universities are tremendously important in terms of funding the overall program, especially services to students. So when we go to the street with an avowed revenue-generating resale situation, we are looking to maximize revenue to the universities, and we hope that's something you'll endorse.
I guess following up on the treasurer's thing, how does it fit into the procurement process?
We do not, of course, directly solicit this support. It is a feature of the current contract. Actually, a very similar structure was put in place in the contract that the board approved in 2003. We do not directly solicit gifts on behalf of the university, if that's to put a very simplistic response on it. In the competitive spirit, these are offered, and of course in an RFP process, as you know, even though this was a single response, they weren't necessarily aware during evaluation and the pendency of the award that they were working alone. This is all offered up as part of their narrative. Of course, the proposal is this thick. A lot of it is in an effort to simply offer the best possible program. Be aware, too, of a couple of details. First of all, the capital campaign gift goes directly to the TU Foundation. Some of the investments really are investments in shared success. The program, the dining program at Towson, is very successful. It's part of making us competitive for the best students because, you know, there are endless blogs and rating systems out there, and students and parents are concerned about food. You know, they want to make sure that their students are getting healthy and nutritious food and at a good value. And the program last year, the board plan, actually increased less than $100 per year. And they're holding board plans level pricing for the upcoming academic year. As far as the investment in equipment and the facilities, this benefits the university, of course, who owns the facility and retains those improvements at the end of a contract, but also helps the dining services contractor be both more efficient and more successful, because the point is sell board plans, you know, and sell as much food as possible. When you're guest at one of our athletic events,
sure,
you're dining on Chartwell's food. We had the board out in March of 2007 to tour Towson and look at some of our new development, and we offered them a modest lunch, also provided that way.
Free review. You have fantastic food up there, so I'm not complaining
about
the quality.
And you want to keep it that way.
I guess
the whole point of university feeding and dining services changed remarkably over the last 15, 20 years. Very different than when we went to college.
If I could ask Mr. Salt, is this the normal procedure for the Sterling? I'm sorry, Mr. Sterling.
Comes all time.
Yeah, Salt. Yeah. Sorry about that. What is this normal procurement process for food services at the university systems members?
I would say it's not unusual. I believe we had a similar arrangement up at Frostburg with an investment in capital improvements. Not a dining services contract, but when we did the bookstore at College Park, we were in the middle of a renovation of the Stamp Student Union, and the contractor contributed $500,000, as I recall, towards the cost of the renovations. So it's had a discussion with Mr. Bedford a while back about this, and you know, my comment was revenue is revenue. They bring it to us in different forms, but it's not unusual.
Sure, but that's the, I guess, the concern I have. Is it possible that this procurement process we have, which I take it is used by almost everybody, scares away the competition? Because obviously the incumbent has a list of incentives to be selected. Are those used, and do you evaluate them in the procurement process? What exactly is being offered by the vendors, whether it's altruistic or just part of their, I guess they're just generous?
We certainly look at any evaluation of price. I'm sure you took all that into consideration.
You understand what I'm driving at, which is that it's a little bit, I mean, not to beat a dead horse, but this is a little bit outside of normal bidding parameters. And it's not nickel and dime promises that are being made here. They're significant. And the question is it contributing to lack of competition? And I'm open to your response.
Well, the program at Frostburg is Aramark. It's a different vendor, so certainly that's not an issue.
I was just going to say that I don't think that in particular scares anybody away from competing. I mean, the kinds of things that we're talking about are the inherent advantage that an incumbent has in any situation. They've got superior knowledge of, you know, the goings-on day-to-day in the delivery of services. So there's a built-in advantage for an incumbent. Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily scare other people from taking a shot at it.
Okay. If you could just let us know what the competitive situation is with these food contracts at other systems, that would be great. And I do just want to mention once again before the system leaves how pleased I was with the Towson baseball team, but I was frankly thrilled with the fact that Mike Waddell, the athletic director, who was primarily responsible for creating this mess at Towson, has left. Apparently he's packed his suitcase. He's heading out to the University of Arkansas. And frankly, I think it's fitting that the same institution that would hire a scoundrel like Bobby Petrino, for those of you that are in the sports world, know what this guy is like. And in fact, he's no longer at Arkansas. But I hope the fine folks in Razorback Nation know who they're bringing into their athletic program. The gentleman who inherited a considerable budget surplus within the athletic department, 2 years turned it into a $1 million deficit. He, with the support of the president, cynically concocted the federal Title IX law as an excuse for eliminating two of Towson's oldest and most successful men's athletic programs, covered up the overspending. He attempted to justify his decision by repeatedly misinforming the public, unable to accurately count the roster sizes. He conveniently forgot to count the women's indoor and outdoor track programs as two separate entities. And this is a person who gave his players and coaches less than an hour's notice that they're eliminating these programs. It's a heck of a way to communicate with people that gave their heart and soul to Towson or their families. And people wonder why I'm dredging this thing up again. I think there's a normal tendency to look at Towson now and say, gee, the baseball team had a great victory at the CAA tournament. We're just going to assume that this story at Towson has had a happy ending with Waddell's departure, and the good guys are going to ride off into the sunset. Well, it isn't Hollywood up at Towson, and the truth is a lot murkier than that. The baseball program's on life support. They have to raise $400,000 over 2 years. Player and coaches and families are in a state of continued uncertainty. This Dominic Fratanuato, their star right fielder, is left, announced he's leaving Towson. His home state of Maryland, he's going to go down to coastal Carolina. Soccer program apparently right now is history. Their folks didn't have the clout that the baseball guys did. And now, of all things, the very person, this Mr. Waddell, who's at the center of all this unfortunate controversy,
hightailed it out the back door, throwing Towson's athletic program maybe into even more confusion and uncertainty, just as a new state-of-the-art athletic arena built with taxpayers' money is being opened up. So this does not have a happy ending unless the new athletic director, and I hope Chancellor Kerwin and the Regents get involved in this, along with President Lusky, and I hope they bring in someone that has the integrity to run an athletic department in a manner that's consistent with the true purpose of intercollegiate athletics and with the ethics that we should expect from a taxpayer-funded institution Towson's caliber. And I really expect a new AD to come into Towson and reinstate, without conditions, the men's baseball and men's soccer team. Huge mistake. And the fact that this gentleman has left such a mess behind him is really regretful. But I move approval of the dining contract.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller.
Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. Now, how about the balance of the University of Maryland system? Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have that one as well. Can to send the remarks on to the Board of Regents. Can we do that? Madam Secretary, if you could send the Comptroller's remarks on to Chancellor Kerwin and the members of the Board of Regents. Okay, the Department of Information Technology.
Good afternoon, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Elliot Schlanger, Department of Information Technology. This afternoon we have 10 items on our agenda, and I'll be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Hearing none, Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Department of Transportation.
Good afternoon, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Acting Secretary Darrell Mobley. MSDOT is presenting 27 items. Items 22 and 23 have been revised. Be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions? Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And that concludes our meeting of the Board of Public Works.
Mr. Comptroller, I'm sorry I got snappy with you. Five cheap shots, and then I have to. There's 25 of my life. I'm making a good board member, but these are